Off the Ball, GAA.
There's no one that can tell me that this isn't like one of their greatest All-Ireland championships.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Gaelic football on Off the Ball.
With AIB, proud sponsors of the GAA Senior Football Championship. Check out hashtag the toughest for more.
We have driven up to the north of Donegal. We're in Gweador. We're in Tárna Leo with the great...
Tárna Leo.
It depends on the type of Gaeilge you have, I suppose.
I suppose it does, yeah. It does.
I'm not too versed on Donegal Gaeilge, and we might actually learn a little bit more about that with the great Máire Brennan. Donegal Person of the Year 2023, I think, is your official title at this stage.
It is, yeah. We're very proud of it, you know. Fantastic. We had an amazing time. Had an amazing year, but I was opening everything from, you know, festivals all over the county to... The lifeguard out in Arnmore, and you name it. It was great. It's lovely, lovely to be part of things. But I'm very much, you know, a Donegal person. I've lived in Dublin when I got married and lived in Dublin for 30 years. And after that, I thought it's time to come back to Donegal. And you know, we'd always, you know, I had a wee house beside my parents anyway, and now it's extended, and it's, you know, I love it.
Was that always the plan? Or once you got out of Donegal, you were thinking to yourself, I'm never looking back and it'll just be a little holiday destination for me?
Oh, no, never. I always loved coming back to Donegal, you know, and coming to the pub here and the sing songs and everything, you know. And but just Donegal itself, it's just beautiful. It's just got everything. The mountains, the beaches for miles, and, you know, the highest cliffs in Europe, the Slieve, and, you know, so it's yeah, it's just a fantastic place. So my heart never left it, really.
Yeah, for sure. So talk to us about where we are now geographically, because Gweador is a fairly large place. It doesn't always have a defined area or a defined village centre or whatever the case may be. So explain our environment here.
It's a huge town land area, and it's the most rural town land in, I think, the whole of Ireland. There's like 6,000 people, and it's like all spread out. So like when you come looking for Gweador, you kind of have to, you know, it's Upper Door, Middle Door, Lower Door, Bunbeg, you know, it's just all the whole area, and I love it for that. I think it's great. So it's not like a village or such. If you're looking for a village, you might get a little bit of that down Bunbeg and Derrybeg, but it's very much just a townland area. So northwest, the very northwest corner of Donegal, and it's just a beautiful area.
It really is absolutely stunning. Even on a day like today when it's overcast and you can't really see too far into the distance, there's an atmosphere about the place that comes with a non-clear day, which is pretty magnificent. It's one of the most beautiful places in the world, never mind Ireland.
Well, and it's been said in National Geographic and Lonely Planets and things like that. So when I travel abroad, like when I've travelled all around the world with Clannad and that, and they've often said to me, you know, the sound of Clannad, where did the sound come from and that? And I often say to them, come to Donegal and you'll feel that earthiness. There's an earthiness here, and we've allowed that to become part of our music. And and you know, I've met people afterwards that you're right, you know, there is an atmosphere here, and it's there, and we've used it musically, and you know, we'll use it probably on Sunday.
Yeah, definitely. Like, I'd imagine there is this sort of vague concept that people who aren't from Ireland or who've never been to Ireland, they get from listening to Clannad. They don't understand maybe what it is, or they have kind of a picture of what it might be. And I'd imagine this has become something of a pilgrimage for Clannad fans.
This pub particularly, you know, this tavern is very much, you get people coming from all over. I mean, people have come from, you know, the likes of course, all over Europe, but from Japan and from Asia, from South America, you know, there was a guy here recently from Chile, you know, and you kind of go, you know, it is a bit of a pilgrimage, and it's really nice to ourselves, and my sister Enya as well is very much, you know, it was the stage he was up on as well. well. Dad had us all up. I'm the eldest of nine, and he dragged us all up on stage, you know, singing, you know. When anybody was in, he sort of said, where's the family, you know, get them up on stage, yeah. You know. And we sort of, you know, reluctantly, you know, dragged ourselves up on stage. But I thank him for it.
Definitely. You know? And I think a lot of music fans thank him for it as well. So Taverna Leo, this is not just any old pub, as people may already guess from some of the nuggets you've already given. This is a significant part of your own family history and a significant part of your career. Can you tell us a little bit more about this place?
Well, it's like where my dad had a show band, and that went kind of the beginning of the 1960s, and he was playing just around locally and at weddings and things, and himself and his wife with 8 kids and one on the way decided to open a bar. God love them, but they must have been very brave. and it was kind of, you know, it was very new to open a place like this, because there's another pub across the way, and there were some old fellas over there, and the story is that they were looking at this place being rebuilt and said, you know, what's happening over there? And they said, oh, it's, you know, it's a young family, very, very, a large young family, and they're opening a singing lounge, which was kind of unheard of, and you're talking about the late 60s, and they was, you know, they said, and where are the people going to come from? You know, and it was really funny, that story was told when we had a 50th anniversary here in a big tent out the back, and there were people there from Russia, from Japan, from Brazil, from, you know, all over Europe and that, and you kind of think, yeah, where are the people coming from? They just, you know, you know, when Dad opened this place, he's a musician himself, used to bring us up on stage, and then we kind of used to get up together and sing, whether it was Beatles songs and Beach Boys songs and Joni Mitchell songs, but always included the Gaelic songs. And we sort of, it became a gradual thing during our holiday time from school. When the school closed, he'd get us up and do a wee spot before he get on. And the local sergeant came in one day and he said, you know, Leo, he said, there's a festival, there's a folk festival in Letterkenny. You should enter your family for it. And Dad showed us the, you know, the entry form, and we said we wouldn't be good enough or whatever, and we left it there. And I think the day before it was due to go in, somebody found it, and we, you know, we said, let's put our name down anyway. And we didn't have a name, and my grandfather was in the corner, and he was saying, you know, what about Clan Asthor, which means clan from door. We were from kind of upper door, and we said, this is a bit awkward, and he said, well, take the A and the D, stick it onto clan, and so that'll, you know.
And
we said, yeah, that'll do us for a while.
Yeah.
So here we are 55 years later, you know.
Still coming up with a better name.
And we entered and we won the competition, and the prize was to make an album, and we were completely naive. It took us 3 years to get around to doing that, you know, but yeah, that's how it kind of gradually started. We were still at school. I was at boarding school in Sligo, and you know,
right.
And we sort of just, people started coming and listen to us, and then there was a German couple that came and heard our first album, our only album at the time, and said, would you be interested in going for a 30 date, you know, stint in Germany, in the Stadthalles in Germany, you know, with a group of other, it was an Irish folk festival, you know, travelling Irish folk festival. And we kind of said, and we get paid, and we said, yeah. This is fantastic. So we went to that, and we the last gig was in the Berlin Philharmonic Hall, and we got a standing ovation for our half an hour show, and went into the dressing room. We said, well, we go professional and see what happens. So
yeah.
Everything was kind of, you know, if you feel Donegal, everything is quite relaxed here, Donegal. We get things done, but if we're kind of a laid back kind of, you know, sure, tomorrow's another day kind of thing.
Is that the truth? Because I did often wonder that. There's definitely like a languid style about Donegal people, which I really love. Like, I mean, there's a picture of Eamon McGee up there in your photo frame, who we have on the show the whole time.
Yeah.
And it, like, if you use him as the embodiment of Guido, it's a very relaxed sort of idea of what people are here. But deeply talented, deeply hardworking is also another thing you'd get from speaking to him very, very briefly even. And also there's a sense of inspiration. Like, Eamon is a massive collector of comic books, for example, and it's like such an interesting tidbit that you'd have that's unusual about a Gaelic footballer. So that's kind of in keeping with this part of the world.
I think, you know, and that's where our career was as Clonard. We just took it as it came. We weren't kind of in a mad rush. We just enjoyed what we were doing and, you know, and got involved in doing it rather than thinking, well, let's be famous and make lots of money.
Yes.
We were kind of enjoying doing the music side of it. And I think that that stands to where we're, you know, we just finished a world tour last year. And I think that, you know, it lasted that long for the simple reason that we were genuinely in it because we loved it. And so there wasn't this mad rush, you know, it was kind of, you know, yeah, we are a bit laid back, but getting things done.
Getting things done. And it does strike me as well that, from what you've told me there, that your father was well aware of the talent that he had amongst his children. And I'd say it wasn't just, you know, something for you to do out there in the other room. He really sensed that there was an opportunity for ye as a family and as a band to go on to do special things.
He just loved music himself. And I don't know whether he saw, you know, huge potential in us. He loved the fact that we performed, just growing up playing with him, and you know, the boys got interested in the instrumentation that he had in his show band and everything, because they were lying around the house, the drums and the guitars and things like that. And that's why Clonard were more, rather than the traditional instrumentation, because that wasn't in our family. And if you didn't have it in your family that era, you know, in the 1960s, you didn't learn it very well, because they didn't have the great schools now that have the Colta schools and the Cranogs and everything around for young kids to learn. So we just took up the instrumentation that was available to us. But being Gaelic speakers, that was there for us, and we had all the Gaelic songs that we grew up with and everything. So the fusion was between these kind of instruments and the Gaelic language and the, you know, and the songs. And sure, you know, people used to laugh at us up here singing in Gaelic, because it was a real country and western kind of area as well, Donegal is, and they thought nobody would be interested in the Gaelic language.
Yeah.
Because you have to remember, the late 60s and the early 70s, when I'd go to Dublin, people would say, don't talk Irish to me now when we go to Dublin, because it wasn't that they were ashamed of it, it was just kind of regarded as being a poor man's language.
Right.
And it was kind of hick and, you know, and culture. And so it was kind of, but we still loved the Gaelic songs, and that's what we had as far as original kind of songs. And we just, so it was a very slow growth for us, because for the simple reason that, you know, we couldn't get a gig in Ireland because of the Gaelic songs. But we were offered tours in Europe and that, and they didn't mind that. But you know, the fact that Harry's Game, which is a Gaelic song, was the first, you know, our first international hit, was sweet.
Yeah.
Very sweet, because it was just like, it's something we believed in, you know what I mean? And and that was great. My dad, it wasn't ambition in sort of way that he was pushing us on stage. He just loved music, and that was his soul, his own thing, you know. And, you know, I was kind of a music teacher at the time. Kieran was doing music, Paul. You know, we sort of just became gradually involved in playing together, and it became a natural thing, really.
It's quite amazing from this vantage point to consider Irish as a language to be uncool, because today it's very much the opposite, right?
I mean, like, take Kneecap, for instance, you know, they're, you know, rapping away in Irish. It's amazing. And I find it absolutely wonderful. I mean, it makes my heart sing to think that, you know, how much it's advanced to the time that we were kind of laughed at and told that, you know, from very reputable people that would have said to us, you know, you have a lovely sound, but you won't get anywhere with the, you know, singing in Irish, you know, in Gaelic. And but we didn't listen to them, thank God. And, you know, but that was us. We always did what we wanted to do. And, you know, and that was, and we stuck with it.
Because that's as important a part of being from here as the earthiness that comes through your sound is the language. I mean, Gweadór is where we are. It is a huge part of your identity representing this part of Donegal, not just Donegal as a whole.
Oh, definitely. Absolutely. And you know, anything like that around here with the Gaelic language and football and things like that are so very important.
Yes.
In the area, you know, my own nephew there, he's a game today actually.
Right.
I forget what game it is, but it's a final out the way. I do forget.
Yeah, somewhere out the way. Yeah.
But like, you know, everybody gets involved and with the community, it's a community place as well, you know, in that sort of way, and everybody's kind of behind you.
You have the green and gold colours on you.
Definitely,
today.
Yeah. I wasn't going to wear a jumper, yeah. You know, a Donegal jumper, but I was definitely going to wear the colours.
What sort of level of fanaticism will you approach Sunday with now, Maya?
Well, would you believe I was at the first time, the very first time Donegal were in the All-Ireland, I was there with my English husband and my 8-month-old child.
Right.
And I got the seat to be there. And I've often said to Aisling, you were there when we won the Sam Maguire. It was extraordinary. It was just the most vibrant, you know, it was just amazing for us as Donegal people to win the Sam Maguire. It was like sensational. And then winning it again in 2012, and you know, and they would be in here with the Sam Maguire, and you know, there was a good few Donegal, Gweadór, the McGee brothers, as you said, Eamon, and Niall now is helping. He's one of the staff.
Yes.
With Jim, and there's three Donegal, I keep saying Donegal, three Gweadór, guys on the team, and Darragh Breen and Oran McFadden and Donal McGillivray. Just so you know, there's a good kind of strong feeling about it. Everybody's cramming for tickets, for goodness sake, you know.
Yeah.
It's just desperate.
Take us back to 1992 then, the first All-Ireland win for Donegal.
Yeah.
Was there some suggestion that you were actually going to sing the national anthem that day?
That's how I was trying to get the tickets, because
right.
We couldn't get tickets. So I wrote to the GAA and I said I'd sing the national anthem to get tickets, and they said it would be too biased for me to be singing the national anthem, but they gave me tickets anyway. Yeah. So it was great.
did they expect a Donegal woman to sing that at the anthem in a different way and giving up Donegal at the end or something like that?
Oh, I don't know, but you see all the Donegal songs now that you hear.
Yes.
You know, the Hills of Donegal, and you know, and there's a McGrory's Glass and Bwee and all that. There's loads of Donegal songs being played all over the place at the moment. It's great.
Have you got a ticket for this Sunday?
No.
Would you be offering your services to sing the national anthem this Sunday?
I was thinking about it, but I don't know if it'll work this time. But no, I'll actually be watching it in here, because there's a great atmosphere in here, and you know, it'll be a madhouse, and you know, it's it will be. It'll be really great.
It does feel that there is a real intersection between sport and music in this pub. Out there, obviously, is where you would have played.
Yeah.
But then when you come in here, you see the Donegal GAA crest. As I mentioned, you've got the McGee
Celtic
brothers. You got Celtic right here as well.
McGee brothers, the Sam Maguire pictures up on the mantelpiece. Yeah, it's very much like the history, the culture of the area in the bar place of it. And then the music is, you know, all the different accolades and different things that Clan have won, and Dania as well, and it's nice. So it is a nice place for pilgrimage, people that have that feel it's a pilgrim for them to come and visit.
Definitely,
you know,
it's an amazing spot. I hadn't realised before chatting to you either that you're a West Ham United supporter.
I am. Yeah. And you wouldn't think for a Donegal person, yeah, of you. But that goes back to when I used to travel, you know, early on with my brothers and my uncles. And, you know, I had to just get into sport.
Yeah.
Because I'd be sitting by myself. It would be a lonely touring for me if I didn't get into sport. So I did get into sport and I got involved in, I love all kinds of sports. But when I used to watch matches, I actually sort of grew a liking for West Ham in their playing. They were a lovely team to watch play, and I was a big fan of Bobby Moore.
Okay.
And that definitely, you know, was a big factor in it. And the funny thing is, when I met my husband, he was a West Ham supporter as well.
Right.
Without me realizing it, you know. And we'd been to their old park where before they moved to the Olympic Stadium, where I saw Liam Brady play the last match with West Ham, which was astonishing. Actually, he was amazing. He had a wonderful game, and it was lovely to be part of. But I've been to West Ham to see them several times, and we've friends there that can get us tickets over there, and we've, you know, there's a compatriot sort of vibe going on that we've made up for people that were Clannad fans that we met when I was on tour with Clannad in England a couple of years ago. And we went, myself and my son, my daughter, were looking for a pub, and Liverpool and West Ham were playing, and we eventually got a pub in Brighton. We were in Brighton the night before we were playing there, and Liverpool were all up on the balcony and their flags and chanting away, and we were downstairs. And we bet Liverpool that day. They were going out with their head bowed. But we met up with some friends who are really good friends of ours now, and sometimes can get us tickets to get to see them. So, no, it's good.
Brilliant.
And it's good to be into sport, you know.
100%, 100%. It's an important part. The other thing just worth mentioning here is that Mick McCarthy is over your shoulder there. He obviously has been into the pub at least on one occasion. And I know we spoke to you about this when Jack Charlton died, but like having such an important role in the cultural movement that was Italia 90, in terms of you and your relationship with sport, that must be right up there.
Look, I was so thrilled. You see, when Larry Mullen was doing the song, they knew Dennis Woods, who was engineering and producing it with him, and they knew I was into football because I used to go and watch Ireland well before they got into the European Cup and the World Cup, and they did the song, and they wanted some sort of a haunting vibe at the beginning of it. So I was called, and I was absolutely thrilled.
Yes.
I mean, it was just amazing to be part of that. You know, I know a lot of people used to speed the first part of to get into the
no chance.
but it was fantastic, and then doing a video with all the boys, and I'd met some of the boys because of Paddy Curran, whose mum's from here, very involved in Man United. And I've often been to the Man United grounds as well because of Paddy, and met, you know, when Kevin Moore was there and Paul McGrath and people. So I actually knew some of them beforehand. Of course, Paddy I knew. But it was really nice. And any time I meet Mick McCarthy, he always remembers me because he was there trying to play the drums. But it was wonderful. I mean, it was great, you know, with being part of, you know, that day with them and being part of the song and everything, you know. It was mad, and I remember standing here singing it,
right,
you know, when we won. This place went absolutely nuts. There was a Congo people going in and out the back and out the back and out in the front and in the in sort of, it was mental. It was all over Ireland. But sport's always been, you know, sports and music has always been very much part of this pub.
It certainly has. By the looks of things, just a couple of other questions for you. I'd just love to get your take on Jim McGuinness. Just like we talk about the genius that's come out of this county on a whole multitude of different levels of discipline. What would be kind of your thoughts on Jim McGuinness on a very broad level? You can speak out to the man, to the football, whatever you like.
I actually think he's quite amazing. I did an event. I'm the ambassador for the Age Friendly in Ireland for Donegal, and we had an event there recently, and Jim came along with it, and I had a great chat with him. But he was up on stage just giving his take on, about age, about how you represent yourself, how he talks to the boys and everything. And it was really quite amazing. I was very, very in awe of how he presents himself, how he talks, and his attitude. His attitude is absolutely amazing. And he's a lovely, lovely guy. And it was lovely to spend time with him and get to know him a wee bit, you know. But he's got just an amazing attitude. And the boys love him. And you can see that. There's huge respect there. And he's a great ambassador, you know, for the Donegal team. He really is. And whatever the outcome is in Donegal, he'll still be up there. I think he's just quite an amazing person as a human being, and he's had his own trials and tribulations, but he really is something else.
He certainly is. Will the whole family be watching now on Sunday?
Oh, listen, there'll be cats and dogs watching. Yeah. Everybody will be watching, definitely. I'll probably come over here and watch it.
Yeah,
we'll have the big screen down, and you know,
yeah,
and we'll be all roaring and shouting and
yeah. Tell us, will Enya get big into it?
Oh yeah, she'll watch it. Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I mean, everybody. I mean, it's the All Ireland. Yeah. Sam Maguire and Donegal's in there, of course. Of course, everybody.
Yeah.
You can't imagine nobody in Donegal not watching it.
And will it be a win? Will you have Sam Maguire sitting up there in a couple of months' time?
I think we will.
Very good.
I think we will. You know, Kerry came up here, was it the beginning of last year? Was it last year, the beginning of the league or something? And we bet them.
Yeah.
And so we'll do it again.
There you go. You've done it once, you can do it twice.
Yeah, we can.
Moya, thanks a million for your chat. Cheers.
Okay.
Thanks a million for the pint.
Cheers.
And good luck Sunday.
All right.
Thank you.